Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to what is being paid attention to, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper. Today is Friday, April the 2nd, 2010, at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Today's topic, positive trends in ADHD, and with us in our virtual studio is Dr. Jefferson Prince. Before we get to into the meat of today's conversation, I want to make you aware of a few shows that are coming up. Next week, we're going to be on break and encourage our listeners to listen to some of the best of shows of Attention Talk Radio. You can visit our website and see the archives, and there's a few suggestions up there. The following week's going to be real exciting. We're going to be talking about ADHD and sex. We're going to have a sex coach on talking about that, and it's going to be a lot of fun talking about that particular topic in ADHD, and I think it's really going to be reinforcing of at least our philosophy here, what's obvious is a function of what you're paying attention to. And then the following week, we're going to be taking a little look at ADHD and religion, which I'm real excited about. But that's for another day. Today, again, our topic is positive trends in ADHD. And with us is Dr. Jefferson Prince. He's an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, the director of child psychiatry at North Shore Medical Center, and a staff member at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. Dr. Prince is involved in research and the characterization and treatment of ADHD across lifespans, as well as pediatric mood, anxiety, substance disorder. He earned his medical degree from Emory University School in Medicine in Atlanta. And in 2005, Dr. Prince was selected as one of the best doctors in America. He's author or co-authored more than 60 original articles, abstracts, and book chapters, and has made more than 150 academic presentations both internationally and nationally and internationally. So with that, welcome aboard, Dr. Prince.
Wow. Well, thank you very much, Jeff. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Yeah, we appreciate you making the time to come on our show. For the listeners, I had heard you speak at the CHAD conference in Cleveland last, I think it was November, on this particular topic, and I was very excited about what you had to share and anxious for you to share it with our listeners. So I guess to kind of get into things, if you could just outline some of the positive trends and share with us what you're learning and where your mindset is on these things, I think that'll get us going.
Oh, sure. Well, that's terrific. I'd love to. And thank you for the opportunity. I'm really excited that people are interested in looking at the positive trends within ADHD and really, I guess, just in living life. And people with ADHD can certainly participate in all of these activities and as well as anybody else. And it's certainly an awful lot of fun to work with folks with ADHD because the great thing is they get better. So if we think, in big... areas of focus, we can certainly appreciate that in the last 20 years or so, our understanding about the neurobiology of both the brain and certainly the brains of patients with ADHD has really just exploded. And that's been a move, and as the technologies have gotten better, we've really just understood how our brains evolve. We've also come to understand, these are contributions not from sort of neuroimaging work, but really from psychology, really what we can do for ourselves. And the sort of idea of positive psychology, we're all indebted greatly to Dr. Martin Seligman, who was the president of the American Psychological Association, helped us understand about and really ask the question how can we build positive individual traits? How can we apply sort of what you're good at mm-hmm. to the to the care and really to our lives, because and sort of like we can learn helplessness that may contribute to depression, you know, can we learn optimism? And, you know, what if happiness is really a habit?
Mm-hmm.
And so Dr. Seligman, and there's a whole branch of psychology that's been very positive about that, and that's an area we can certainly talk a little bit about. The other contributors, Dr. Robert Cloninger, has really looked at and focused on well-being and about our well-being. So that's another contribution. A third really gets to Dr. Daniel Goleman and his focus on really emotional intelligence, or the sort of your EQ instead of your IQ. All of these, doctors and their work, and it's really been taken off, has taken off so tremendously, has such positive momentum, has really gone to building on, and if we might think, Jeff, about sort of a stool, and if we think about maybe supporting a person on a stool, we might, and I kind of borrow this from Dr. Herbert Benson as an analogy, we might think of the four legs of the stool or the table that supports the patient. We have a medical leg to stand on, a psychological leg to stand on. We might have for younger folks an educational, but also in older folks maybe an occupational leg to stand on, and adaptations we can make. And the fourth leg is really the self leg. And what can you do for yourself? And this is really where such an exciting area of growth is happening. And this is where we see the overlap with neurobiology. We've come to understand, in fact, that we can actually change our brains. So that the concept of neuroplasticity, we've come to appreciate, we can, by, if you will, mental training, impact the structure and the function of our brains, and certainly probably our minds. And it's really in that area that we see some beginning work specifically within ADHD. But certainly this whole area has just taken off in the last few years.
That's interesting. So we can individually, we can actually change our brains.
Yes.
I want to share, as a coach, I'm an attention coach, and I've called myself that for years because my philosophy is, you know, what's obvious is a function of what you pay attention to. And so many times in coaching, particularly those with ADD, I spend a lot of time basically trying to pay attention to what's working for them as opposed to what's not. And so many times I just, somebody will call me up and say, you know, I need coaching on organization. And I say, well, how'd you make this call? And they're like, what? And, well, so you were organized somehow, and you got here. What was that? And it's funny because I just start to explore, because it worked if they made the call.
Right.
And what I'm hearing you say is that you know, yourself or with the help of somebody, if you can actually start to shift what you're paying attention to, and you start to do those things differently, it actually leads to changes in your brain. That's fascinating.
Absolutely, and of course the area we've really, I'm not a neuro imaging researcher. I'm familiar with the literature, but I've not really contributed to those to that body of work myself. But it's exciting to share. But certainly, the area in mind training, if you will, and we might put kind of quotes around that, coming out of the things such as mindfulness meditation, another doctor whose work has been very influential in this is out at UCLA, a gentleman named Dan Siegel, and he's written a lot and summarized that literature. But really, the idea is to, with mindful awareness, or we might think mindful attention, is to learn to both be aware and increase your awareness of what's going on around you, and then to be able to separate out different aspects within your field of awareness. So we may take, we may pay attention to our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
We may pay attention to our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
We may pay attention to our body sensations. Often, in our lives, we get so caught up in what's going on and in doing things that
mm-hmm.
all those thoughts and feelings and body sensations get kind of jammed into one. And if you will, we kind of are constipated with sensation or overwhelmed, and we just have to, for survival's sake, just to go on down the road, we just ignore those things.
Mm-hmm.
Mindful attention asks us if we can slow down enough to actually invite in those sensations, and not only to be aware of those sensations, but in fact to start to investigate, if you will, become our own scientist, into what is our relationship with those thoughts, with those feelings,
mm-hmm.
with those body sensations, and understand that relationship in a way that we become aware that our habits often are that we kind of pursue pleasant things and push away unpleasant things, and we do this over and over again to in a way that we become not aware of.
This is interesting, because on a as a attention coach working with those that have ADD, one of the most, and this is a skill that I say that I teach, is to pause and to pay attention to what you pay attention to. To think about what you're thinking about, to stop and look at what you're doing so that you become aware of your actions, because once you become aware of it, you actually can choose at that point in time to pay attention to what you were doing or actually pay attention to it differently.
Well, Jeff, I couldn't agree more. I think, if you will, and others have used the term of being aware of awareness.
Yep.
And that's really the idea of metacognition, if you will, is being aware that you're aware.
Mm-hmm.
And in that process, and repeatedly coming back to that process, which I would say we all have the inherent ability to do. This
mm-hmm.
is just part of being human. Everyone can do it.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not taught in our education. We're actually taught to learn more facts, you
yep.
know, get your books, get in class, be quiet, take notes, write the homework down, and go on to the next one. And really, not only are we taught not to be aware, but we're actually taught to be unaware, ignore what you see.
Well, you know, it's fascinating that you're talking about this, and you've got me kind of excited. On one hand, as a coach, we teach those with ADD, pay attention to what you pay attention to, and we actually have some mental models. Like, I have this picture of a rocket ship, and the metaphor is at any point in time, this your mind is like a rocket ship, only you fuel it with interest,
mm-hmm.
and that your brain instinctively is going to pay attention to what it's interested in. And I have this model designed to delineate what I call passion, interest, fool's interest, and disinterest. And you look at this picture of this rocket and this stuff. I won't get into some details, but the idea is to pause and pay attention to what you're paying attention to, and think of it in terms of this rocket and take a look at symptoms. So if you're procrastinating, the idea here is that's disinterest. So you're trying to do other things that you're more interested in. It's interesting, because once you pause and you realize I'm procrastinating, and say, what is it I'm not interested in?
Mm-hmm.
Which is not always obvious.
Right.
That you pause, and all of a sudden it comes to you. Just to share a story, I was sharing this process with a person one time, and they caught themselves, they live in Seattle, and they wear a lot of sweaters, and they have to hand wash it, and they were like procrastinating over cleaning these sweaters, and they pause and say, what is it I'm really not interested in here? And they just sat there for a second, and they realized that the sweaters were soaking, and they didn't like to get their hands wet.
Right.
And once they realized that that's what they were not interested in, or that's what it was, the solution became obvious. I should just get some rubber gloves.
Right.
And it was fun, because they went out and acted on it. What I'm so excited about this conversation is as a coach, we have these tools to kind of help frame it out, to kind of help you guide what you're paying attention to. Is it scientific? I mean, I'm using an analogy of a rocket and stuff, but it's just, I call it, it's an insightful thinking tool to help people pay attention to what they're paying attention to, and then pay attention to it differently.
Right.
And I'm excited about what you're saying.
Well, I was just this past weekend had the pleasure to attend a mindfulness and education conference, and I heard an excellent physician, Dr. Amy Saltzman from out in California, and she spoke of a similar model that you're talking about, the rocket ship. Her acronym was PEACE,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just briefly tell you about it because it gets to the same point, and then we can talk a little bit about the sort of how this shows up in neuroimaging. And the P is for pausing, and it's sort of, you know, getting to these, we talk about sort of getting almost moments. Like, you know, and maybe in your patient, you almost put your hands in the water, but then you kind of come to realize. But if we can help people realize when they and get to these almost moments, right before they, you know, before you send off the email, maybe you ought to print it off and just put it in a drawer.
Yep.
Something to that thing. But pausing. And the E is for exhaling and then inhaling, just taking a breath, and do that as long as you need to once you recognize that something is going on. The A is really, for a number of A's, acknowledging that things are difficult, accepting what, you know, because what's here right now is here right now, and accepting it doesn't mean you like it or
mm-hmm.
you want to keep it that way, but you accept that what's here right now is here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Then you allow yourself to really experience what you're feeling. The way you're feeling is the way you're feeling. You're, you may be angry, excited, devastated, but you acknowledge, accept, and allow. And by bringing those aspects of your field of awareness into your attention, you're then able to choose. And it's this clarity. Can you see really what's going on? Do you have the courage to really speak your truth and recognize the truth of other people? And then this gets into both creativity and, if you will, comedy or humor. How do you live your life and breathe life into life? And then that allows you to choose and engage, like you said, in what it is that you're interested in. And that process is available to all of us, and it seems particularly helpful for those who suffer with ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
Some work recently at UCLA that's published in the Journal of Attention Disorders really looked at the use of mindfulness training in adolescents and adults and showed some initial, and this is pilot work, so this is work that's
mm-hmm.
in early stages, but really demonstrated in that cohort how such training can help both in adolescents and adults engage in academic work and occupational work and really improving their relationships.
Wow. This is, I'm really enjoying this conversation. I'd like to do this. I want to go to a commercial break real quick.
Okay.
And then we come back because we've been talking about like the stuff. We can go more to the brain side and the changes as a result of that, if that's okay. But before we go, for those listeners that might want to contact you if they've got any questions, how can you be reached?
Sure. Well, I have an email. It's just my name, Jefferson B as in baseball, Jefferson B Prince at mac.com.
Mac.com. All right. With that, we'll be right back.
Thank you.
This is Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. When you're stuck, what do you pay attention to? If you're paying attention to the same logic or level of thinking that created the problem, maybe you need to pay attention to something else. DIG Coaching excavates outcomes by paying attention to what you pay attention to. After all, if you're paying attention to the wrong thing, you're likely paying attention to the wrong solution. To learn more about finding your obvious solution, go to digcoaching.com and download the free audio file, Finding the Obvious Solutions When They Aren't So Obvious. Don't delay, do it today.
If you have a topic that you want covered or question answered, just email us at info@digcoaching.com.
Be part of the show. Dial 646-652-4409. And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. We are live with Dr. Prince talking about positive trends in ADHD. Dr. Prince, can you speak more to the physical changes of the brain? You've got me very curious about that. If we're paying attention to things differently and doing these types of things, it's actually changing it. I'm fascinated by that.
Oh, sure. So there have been a number of studies, and really, and this is mostly looking at two groups of people, and we might think in terms of the changes in the brain is changes in brain activity and changes in structure. Well, several things have become apparent. Is the we might think of the medial prefrontal cortex, and that really refers to the middle part of our brains towards the front, and that's involved in a variety of activities, both in regulating our emotions,
mm-hmm.
Directing our thoughts,
mm-hmm.
taking the information from our body awareness
mm-hmm.
That comes up and informs really what it is that's going on, so if we look at long-term meditators, and these are sort of the Olympian meditators, or
yep.
maybe you know where it's baseball season, we might think of them as the if you're from Boston, the David Ortizes, or
uh-huh.
maybe if you're from New York, well, I don't know who you would think. But we're still bitter from last year, but clearly mental training by these sort of Olympian meditators really showed, using functional imaging and Dr. Davidson's at University of Wisconsin, that the areas of flow in these meditators' brains were much more in sync with other people. They were able to have much more sort of brain waves that really represented more clarity in their thinking. So that's sort of in the functional area.
Mm-hmm.
There have actually been some similar changes seen in people who were not meditators. So there's some work that's been done in Pennsylvania where they take these are troops that are going heading off for deployment, and
mm-hmm.
they train them in a type of training called MBSR, Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, that Dr. Jon Kabat-Zinn at the University of Massachusetts and Medical School piloted about 30 years ago. And they were actually able to show that the troops before deployment actually had lower levels of stress. And the hope is, or the exciting part is, perhaps they will be protected somehow from their experience, so that maybe they would be less likely to develop things such as PTSD given the amount of stressors. And I don't know the answer to that yet, but that's, again, I want to point out that it's not just in the Olympian meditators that this work has been done, but there's some recent work, and we want to read it with caution because they're not huge numbers,
yep.
but they're strong studies and well-done studies showing that we can take people in from 8 weeks of training, we can
mm-hmm.
actually influence the structure as well as the function of their brains. Now, the areas that connect the medial prefrontal cortex with the lower structures like the limbic system and with lower
mm-hmm.
structures like in the brainstem, that's really the insula. And that's really, if you will, the highway of bringing information back and forth to these different
uh-huh.
areas. So like when you look in violinists, they'll have higher amounts of neurons in certain areas coordinated with their fingers. Taxi drivers have bigger maps in the areas of their visual spatial, so they can get us to where we need to go, if you will. So again, in groups of people who were not big meditators, Sarah Lazar here in Boston at Mass General has shown increases in areas of the brain such as the insula, the
mm-hmm.
hippocampus, and these have really helped correlated with the amount of improved attention. so that it's really exciting work. And really in the posterior cingulate gyrus, which is the part of the cortex that lies just above the corpus callosum, so in the back part of the brain, if you will. And the idea is that, just like you were saying, Jeff, we spend so much time having sort of directed, focused attention on one little piece of our day.
Mm-hmm.
What is helpful often is, particularly with stressful events or things that don't go our way, is to put it in a bigger container.
Mm-hmm.
You know, expand the perspective you put on what this is, what's going on now, is not going to last forever.
Mm-hmm.
That area of the brain in the posterior cingulate cortex seems to be able to help improve our ability to do that, if you will, to take our understanding and really expand it, place it in a larger context, and that's really something that will, I don't know, it seems to help improve our self-efficacy. It puts things in perspective, if you will.
Absolutely. You know, as I was listening to you, kind of like, you know, our focus is directed, and if you back up and kind of take it in, pause, if you will.
Yeah.
I was looking back at your comments at the top of the show, like how our knowledge or our understanding of ADHD has really exploded in the last 20 years.
Yes.
And then you started kind of talking about the focus on well-being, like, and I'm probably putting words in your mouth, but more you're not broken, you're fixed, or just the side of just kind of like paying attention to what's good in there. And then we didn't talk about it, but the EQ as opposed to IQ, it seems to me that our knowledge is expanding, but we're also the diversity, we're starting to look at things in different ways and starting to understand ADHD and from a bigger context and a bigger picture. And to me, that's what's real promising, is we're probably looking at some things that we never did before and really starting to understand more what we can do.
Oh, I would really agree with you, and really being able to use the strengths that people with ADHD have to for their advantage, because, you know, the real idea behind a lot of this is that when it gets right down to it, there's way more right and healthy about you than wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we build on that?
But I have to plug myself here a little bit. The end of this month, I'm going to be in Chicago for the ADHD Coaches Organization Conference, and I'm doing a presentation. And my presentation is on the science of similar.
Uh-huh.
And the gist of the presentation is, for grins and gurgles, I just kind of break down science, the biological science and physical science, and kind of walk the way through and start talking about what's the science of one. I mean, how do you run a science experience on something you got nothing to compare it to?
Right.
And the point of the talk is to kind of shift the attention away from when you've got a problem. So many times we go grab the obvious solution from the top 10 list of obvious solutions, and if you're different, maybe your solution is not on that top 10 list, and actually to start paying attention to how you naturally work, or pay attention to how or what you're paying attention to. And what I like about what you're saying is that there's some validation as you start to do that and you become your own scientist and pay attention to your own thoughts and pay attention to how you do it differently. It's changing your brain, and there's some, I guess, correlation here that it's actually physically changing the brain there. And it's, I think that's real exciting, because it's really empowering to people to kind of help them advance themselves, as opposed to just walking in, I guess, being fixed, if you will.
Absolutely. And to me, I'll comment on two areas around that, because that's really exciting work you're doing. And it goes along Dan Siegel has a model of sort of, if you will, an image of the river of integration he talks about. And, you know, the integration being able to be, you know, aware but flexible but stable and energized and coherent. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
what we kind of would want both for ourselves and our children and our parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that the river of integration is kind of bound on both sides. On one side by the bank of chaos, and by on the other bank is the bank of rigidity. And that much of the time we kind of float between those. And it's really trying to develop a psychology, a worldview, about how do you remain integrated so that you're able to do what you need to do.
You got me all jazzed up now.
Woohoo!
Hey, Dr. Prince, I'd like to thank you again for coming on the show. I know that our listeners will really enjoy this, particularly because this is posted on iTunes and stuff and accessible. A lot of people listen to it afterwards, and I found this conversation personally insightful, and I really appreciate it. We'll have to have you back sometime. Thanks again.
Well, thank you, Jeff, and I love your work, and thanks so much, and thanks to the people out there.
Take care, everyone. Catch you next week.
Thank you.